Hello, everybody, and welcome to HPR. I'd like to take a few moments of your time here to make a few announcements. First of all, an apology to today's host. I missed his show on the FTP server, and as such, there was a slight scheduling delay, which is seeing his show come out today instead of late last week. I'd also like to make it clear that we're actually having a HPR booth at two of the Linux Fests, upcoming Linux Fest. First of all, on the 2nd of April, we're going to have a booth at the Northeast GNU Linux Fest. And on the 30th of April to the 1st of May, we'll be having a booth at the Linux Fest Northwest. Both of those booths are looking for people to come over and assist, supplying equipment or just coming over to say hello. If you're going to be at those festivals, feel free to snag some interviews for HPR and send them on in. And while I'm taking up some of your time, I've got an email from some of the guys who are putting together a book review, an audiobook review. And the first book, because it contains some spoilers, they'd like the listeners to go and listen to the book themselves. And the book is available on audiobook format from podiobooks.com/title/badge-of-infamy. If you want to join in with the fun and games, go download that book and have a listen to it. And now, back to your regularly scheduled shows.
Saludos y saludos. This is Reclaudio Montalban, brother of Ricardo. If you are like me, you enjoy the finer things in life, like cars, Corinthian leather, and Linux Fests. Join Indiana Linux Fest, one of the finest Linux Fests, as they begin their march to freedom. From the 25th to the 27th. Events include LPIC exam cram class, LPIC and BSDA certification exams, Fedora Activity Day, as well as the second Drupal Camp Indie Community Driven Talks, plus performances by Dual Core, Shammers and Left Hand. Keynote speakers include Darus Baylog of OpenNMS and Bradley M. Kuhn, Executive Director of the Software Freedom Conservancy. They are also still looking for volunteers and sponsors. So, if you are interested, go to indianalinux.org to learn more. That's indianalinux.org. Now that is what I call fine Corinthian leather.
Hello, this is DODD Dummy, and this is my first HPR episode entitled How I Found Linux. I thought this would be a nice, easy topic for me to start with. So here we go. I'll start off by a little explanation of my nickname, DODD Dummy. It comes from the kind of a pun of my last name, Dodd, and the mainframe JCL syntax DD Dummy, which is basically the mainframe equivalent of Dev Null, the Bitbucket circular file, what have you. And so that's what DODD Dummy means. Funny for mainframers. So I started my computing career. I didn't really I wasn't into computers in my younger days, not so much because I wasn't interested. I just didn't, we didn't have the resources, and I never, for some reason, it never occurred to me that I could have a computer at home. But even, just to give you an idea, I got my first Atari 2600 in 1980, so I was kind of late to the game there. For whatever reason, we didn't get a Commodore 64, Trash 80, any of those computers from that time frame. And my first real exposure to a computer, I guess, wasn't until high school. I had a class in, I believe it was my junior year of high school, maybe my senior year. And it was Rascal. I believe that was the language, but basically, we were using a form of Pascal, but it wasn't Pascal. That was an interesting class, but I didn't have a computer at home, so I only got to play with as much as I could at school, and I didn't have spare time, you know, just hang around school like I did in some years. But I made a video game that basically two spaceships, and you had a very simple obstacle course that you had to maneuver around, and the first ship that maneuvered the course and went to his landing site won. And at the end, I had a sort of a little cutscene that I don't remember what, but anyway, the aliens talked, and they were in a garage, and a garage door came down. But anyway, I remember that kind of specifically because my teacher said in front of the class that she wished everybody had a imaginative mind like mine. So that was kind of a slightly embarrassing and proud moment, kind of all mixed up together. But then I didn't, let's see, that was probably in 83 or 84. I didn't really have any other computer experience until probably nothing to speak of. I had a friend who had a computer in the, I guess, the late 80s, early 90s probably, and I played around a little bit with that, but mostly just playing video games and no real work. I guess in around 90, I don't really remember what year, sometime in the early 90s, we got DBase 4, and together we volunteered to run a chess club's basically membership database. We used DBase for that, and the USCF had you could buy, I don't know if you had to buy it or they gave it to you, but anyway, they had on disk, they had their database, and so we played around with that. And I remember it was back then, I guess we had a 286 or 386, and their database had about, I want to say, somewhere around 60,000 entries, and it was set up to where you couldn't easily, well, no one I knew could figure it out, but you couldn't, it would take a long time to process that many records, and you couldn't just delete records because it had some sort of integrity checking. And I remember that was my first hack that I figured out how to trick it so that you could delete records and only have the records that were in your area, so that reduced the number of rows, I think, down to like 3,000 or 4,000, and it was manageable. I remember the feeling I got when I figured that. I think if I remember correctly, what I had to do was I took the key that was on the last record of their database and I just copied it over to the key of the last record that, or maybe I kept the last record and deleted the rest. But anyway, that was kind of my first hack. I still didn't have a computer, and I still only got, you know, very little computing time. I did have in college too. I forgot I had a two-hour Pascal course in college. That was fun. I don't remember how well I did, but I remember that I took a long time, spent more time on that class than any of my other classes. So that was, let's see, that brings me up to around 1997, 1998. I was working on the mainframe, the mainframe programmer, and COBOL, mainframe COBOL. And I heard that we were going to start using Unix, actually convert over to Unix. And around that same time, I heard about this free version of Linux or Unix that I could run at home on my PC. And so I looked around and found at the local library they had Red Hat. And so I checked that out and I tried installing it, but I couldn't get anything to run. But I still was interested, so I kept reading about it and I looked around on the internet. I guess it was a few months later, but I came across the SUSE at Best Buy retail box. So my main focus wasn't saving money, it was being able to have a similar computing environment at home that I had at work, so that way I could play around. Because by that time I'd had my first computer that was my own, and I didn't have to, you know, wasn't a friend's I had to steal from or steal time from. So I bought that retail box. I think it was about $60-$70. Took it home and I could get most things installed with it. I don't remember if I had X or not, but at work, by that time I'd got Unix at work. And at work it was only command line. Actually, I didn't know it, but we did have CDE available to us, but for no one on my team used it. So we were all command line users. So what I'd gotten working from SUSE was the command line, and so I was kind of happy. Went through the Unix programming environment by Richie and Kernahan, and so went through that, and that was great. I don't remember exactly how, but someone told me about X, and then I tried to I knew about X, but I couldn't quite get it working, so I was only at the command line. But I don't know, for some reason I didn't really realize that it was broken, because like I said, I don't know how, but for a while I didn't realize Unix even had a GUI. Somehow I found out about that, and I was so trying to get X to work, and I couldn't get it to work. Somewhere in there, I finally got high-speed internet connection. So I took a weekend and I downloaded, I want to say, about 12 distributions over that weekend. Live CDs mostly, or I don't know if they were live CDs, but anyway, I think it ended up being about 25-30 CDs that I downloaded. So I tried installing all of those CDs, and it was going terrible. I guess I was 4 or 5 distros in, and I could really get anything working that I thought was suitable. And finally, like I said, I guess about halfway through the distros, I got the Mandrake, and it installed, and almost everything worked on it. It had GUI, had, you know, X up and running, and I don't remember if it was KDE or GNOME at that time, but anyway, I had a graphical environment that looked more or less what I was familiar with in the Windows world. So I was kind of happy. The only two things I remember that didn't work were my printer, which was an HP, I believe, and my joystick through the sound card. And That was kind of disturbing, so I still had to go back to Windows. I kept trying, and I remember it took me about 6 months to finally get both of those working. I try pretty much every weekend. And the main thing that was messing me up, I think, was the kernel had just switched, and something about how you load the, I don't remember now, but something about how you load the drivers changed right then, and I was basically reading old documentation, and I couldn't find it. Took me forever, and finally I found one little paragraph on the site that told me exactly. I remember thinking, man, I'm so stupid. It was pretty easy. I just had to type that in, and things worked fine. So I was going along pretty happily with Mandrake. It really was pretty helpful because I got to test out a lot of things at home, and that I really wouldn't have had a time at work to play around with. So it got me into, when I finally got officially, I had Unix, but it wasn't officially my work assignment for a while. And then by the time I finally got where I was actually working with Unix, the time I'd spent at home on Linux, I was pretty much at home. I remember I did a couple of nice scripts. I think one's still in use that place. Basically, they were processing all their error reports, error messages manually from their batch cycle, and I just wrote something that stored them and reported if it was the same error or if it had already been logged in their trouble system. But I don't know if it's still in use or not, but it was as of a couple years ago. I guess the interesting question in my mind regarding why people switch from one operating system to the other isn't so much the reason you tried it, but the reason you stuck with it. So for me, there were a couple of things. One, at least that stick out in my mind. One is I thought the command line environment was much richer in Unix than in DOS. Now I know there are add-ons, and they were probably around at that time. For example, I know that I run Corn Shell in DOS. But it was just built into Linux, so there wasn't anything special. So that was one reason. The other reason was there were things that you could do in Linux that just came with the system that you had to buy in Windows, or it was hard to find in Windows, or you had to get some free copy or pirate or shareware. Just for example, at the time, I could not figure out how to mount a CD image, just an ISO in Windows. I know there was some product I could have bought for $20, but in Linux it just came with the system. And I think there was, not too long ago, I read some way of how to do it in Windows, and it supposedly worked way back then, but it was hard. Compilers. It was hard to find compilers for Windows that were free and open source. Free was hard as well, and I don't really have a lot of money to play around with new tools, and so the fact that there were quite a few free in Linux was another reason that I stayed. I also didn't like, more and more, I didn't like some of the things in Windows. For example, I didn't really like the registry. That always bothered me. I had to always install stuff, and Windows was kind of driving me nuts. I liked the package management system in Linux. I kind of like that method of installing software and kind of have one place to go for things. But yeah, I guess that's one of the main reasons is is that just seem to be some tools that were just part of Linux or very easy to find in Linux that I didn't have in the Windows world. And I don't know if it was, I'm sure that was partially my ignorance, but I don't think wholly. So I'd say that's the main reason that I stuck with Linux, is that I just had tools that I could use better. And now, I mean, at some point in time, I liked Linux better, and I thought it generally worked better. But I guess starting off, it really was mostly I just had tools in Linux that I could use better from the tech side. And then I came to also know the whole Unix philosophy on sharing and helping people out and collaboration, and all of that seems to be more appealing in the Linux world than in Windows. So that's the reason I stuck. Well, I guess that about wraps it up for this episode on how I found Linux. I'd just like to give a warm thank you to Ken Fallon and everyone else who has put in a good effort to keep Hacker Public Radio going. I know I've been listening since, I'm pretty sure since day one. I don't remember who, but I remember some discussion before Hacker Public Radio started or maybe right when it started, but that they were going to put the show together by the people for the people, and everyone can contribute. And so I remember thinking, man, this is great. And so I think I've listened to every episode. I listen even the episodes I don't like. I listen to them all. I guess the only little bit of cheating I do is I listen to it on a device that has Rockbox, and I speed up the, if I don't like the show, I play it on about 150 speed, and then I slow down the pitch to 96, so I listen to it a little bit faster than normal. But I do listen to every show, and I appreciate all the hard work that people put in, and whether it's talking about chickens or wood screws or how I found Linux, what's in my bag, dumpster diving, I find it all interesting, and appreciate everybody's work.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.